when we can, we buy from farms that are doing regenerative methods, but it's inconsistent because we'll get like a truckload of that and then it's gone. And then we're, you know, have to dip in the commodity and we can't just be out of stock. That's not going to work.
Right.
So we've adopted a concept called regenerative by design. And it's like our internal framework where we're like, okay, our supply chain is regenerative by design. We're working to design it to be connected to A, family farms that are open to transitioning to regenerative, and B, you know, smaller farms that are already doing regenerative. And then also our path to market for new products is going to be based around what is available that's already regenerative and already milled. Mm-hmm. And then we can buy it. And it's like, we don't have to do all that work ourselves. But boy, like, you know, it's a process.
Welcome back to our podcast, Tasting Terroir, a series of conversations that introduce you to people who are making food healthier and possibly more flavorful for you and easier on the planet. We do this by looking at the link between soil health and the flavor of your food. I'm your host, Sarah Harper. That clip was from an interview I did with powerhouse small businesswoman Joni Kinwell Moore, co-founder of Snacktivist, a snack food company working to bring regenerative ingredients into their brand. You'll get to hear more from Joni and from a top chef later in this episode. In our discussion last week, we learned about the emergence of weed-killing robots and the impact that they have on scaling up regenerative agriculture, making it possible for farmers to grow food and food ingredients without tillage and without chemicals at a large scale. As Clint Brower, a Kansas farmer and co-founder CEO of Greenfield Robotics, noted in episode 9, the Greenfield robots will make it possible for farmers to expand regenerative farming principles at a level we can't even really imagine yet. Still, better farming doesn't directly benefit you as a consumer if you can't access the ingredients these better farms grow, or if you can't trust the claims of brands that market regenerative farming to you. This brings up a question that I'd like you to think about and share feedback with me about. Can a brand authentically be regenerative if it doesn't A, know where the farmers are in their supply chain, and B, is not working directly with the farmers to understand and communicate the guiding philosophy and unique regenerative practices of the region that they're sourcing from? I mean, if regeneration of the land is different from one place to another, if it really is a mindset and not a simple checklist, then don't you have to know the farmers implementing it? I mean, don't you have to really know them, not just which boxes they checked off last year? And if that's true, then isn't regenerative inherently not a commodity, but instead something unique, something able to preserve the uniqueness of the place and the way it was grown, the flavor, the health, all of it? I'm not saying you can't have climate-friendly food commodities or organic commodities, things that focus on one or two measurable traits that are able to be tested and verified and aggregated at scale. I guess I'm wanting you to think about whether a trait alone, even a good one, is the same as regenerative. Of course, you probably know my answers to these questions, but they are real questions. And I would love to hear your thoughts about them. So if you'd like to share, please send me an email to hello@globalfoodandfarm.com. That's all spelled out, hello@globalfoodandfarm.com. To help you think through these questions, our episode this week features two interviews, one from an up-and-coming food company and the other from a top chef that works with regenerative farmers and the public along a lot of these topics. First up, we will hear from Joni Kinwell Moore, co-founder of Snacktivist Foods, a food company working to bring regenerative farmers into their supply chain to create everyday favorites like waffles, cookies, and pizza. Next, we will hear some perspectives from Chef Bastien Guichon, a top farm-to-table chef at the Stone Barn Center in New York. Hi, Joni. How are you?
good. Thanks for having me, Sarah. Nice to see you.
So first of all, just let people know where you're at, what your business is, what you do.
Well, I'm Joni. I'm the founder of Snacktivist Foods. So we're on the CPG side, and I own a food brand that is focused on bringing biodiversity back to the grain and legume sector through the, you know, making a functional, familiar foods like waffles and cookies and pizzas, like things that people know what to do with in the United States. But we're really passionate about working with regenerative farmers. We're obviously not farmers ourselves. I grew up farming, but when I was a kid, I decided that was not for me, and definitely more on the consumer awareness and consumer momentum side. Definitely noticed early on there was a disconnect with the consumer pull from the regenerative side and trying to solve that conundrum.
Tell everybody what you think of, what is your definition of regenerative agriculture?
Yeah, so I have a different approach, I think, than most people that I know. And I've really grappled with this a lot over the last few years of trying to figure out an easier definition, because it is such a big, sprawling category of notions and tools and concepts and outcomes. And so, you know, over the last few years, I've really tried to figure out how we can simplify it. And so for me personally, I look at regenerative through the lens of what I call the three B's of regenerative, which is biodiversity, biomimicry, and biologicals. And that those include both tools and outcomes that together, when used efficiently, can support farmers in multiple, you know, periods of their regenerative practice, like from the early beginnings and starting to the ones who are really expert and superb and have been doing this for many decades, and, you know, can encompass additionality and those additional things that you're doing every year to improve. And I feel like by using the three B's, we can communicate a little better to consumers where they can actually get involved. Where when you tell them about like cover cropping and no-till, they get kind of confused. I feel like they're so disconnected from agriculture that it's tough to tell that story.
That's really good.
Thank you.
Maybe even for some that aren't as connected even to those terms, share a little bit. So biodiversity, lots of differences going on in the ecosystem.
Yeah.
Biomimicry, maybe.
Yeah. And if anybody has any great ideas about how we can make that more layman's term, I literally have been asking everybody, because it is still like it's an ecology term. Mm-hmm. And, but biomimicry is really when you look at what your natural surroundings are, like what is the native ecosystem in a location? So there's a context play here, because that's different everywhere. Mm-hmm. And how do we mimic the system so that we have more efficient, agricultural production? So if you're in the coast and you're a mariculturist and you're doing seaweed farming, obviously that's going to look very different than ranching in the Colorado Plateau in Nevada or doing row cropping in Arkansas. So to me, the biomimicry piece is very important because it takes that into account, which is a more inclusive to diverse concepts of regenerative, which is one of the tribalism problems that's happening right now. Everyone's like, well, this is how it works here. It's like, well, you have to look big picture. And then also it includes things like animal integration. Well, that is a biomimicry thing, because in natural systems, we always have multiple species in one location. So it really tries to embrace that concept of big picture thinking.
It's like copycatting nature.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if you're working with nature rather than working against it, it's by default more efficient and resilient.
Yes. So, what was your third B? Biodiversity, biomimicry.
Biologicals.
Yes.
Yeah. So again, biologicals has a lot of different layers to it, because I feel like getting away from chemical intensive agriculture is a good thing, but that can't necessarily have like flip of a switch overnight. I mean, we have a very chemically dependent agricultural system, just like we have a chemically dependent human system. And to get those both untethered from this chemical dependency cycle, it's going to take some time, and it's going to take rebuilding the biological system. So things like probiotics for soil are really important, just like probiotics for human health are very important. And in that biological world, there's a lot of overlap between humans and soil systems and farming and nature and all of it. So, you know, I feel like biologicals as a group are the foundation of that. And so, again, you can animal integration. Well, that brings in biologicals on many levels, or, you know, soil stewardship is like inherently very biological focused.
It goes along with what I've heard others in this area talk about, that the focus shifts in regenerative from chemistry to biology. Like focus on restoring the biology instead of using chemistry, you know, to control things.
To control it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, in that way, like there are circumstances sometimes where it still is appropriate to use a chemical because of something catastrophic. And there's some grace there, because if you have a more intact biological system, you know, you're going to be less likely to need those things in the first place. And then you're going to be more resilient to the chemical input because the system can absorb it. You know, that's just my personal thoughts on that.
So the second part of this talk here is about then how you are practicing it or working with those who are practicing it. And I have to say, from my work with brands and watching the food industry, this has been a real challenge the supply chains for it aren't distinct, aren't built. It's very hard to work as a brand directly with a farmer. So I'm thrilled to hear about how you're thinking about, you know, putting this into practice in your brand.
Yeah. Well, we've put a lot of work into this over the last few years, because we quickly discovered when we launched Snacktivist and wanted to have this agricultural impact that it was much harder than we realized, because like you said, there is no infrastructure, there's no marketplace. Like, I mean, what you guys have done is the closest thing we have to kind of, and then, you know, John Kemp has a network where you can tap into farmers, which is great, because that's step one. But step two and step three are getting it through the value channel. And as you know, that is a nightmare, especially if you're working with something like our pilot line is gluten-free. It's certified gluten-free, where we have a focus, like our foundational focus is on drought resistant crops that have a need and a value in cover cropping and in crop rotations and bringing back diversity. And so they happen to be gluten-free grains by nature. So you may as well make the gluten-free product, right? Because that's an early adopter group that's easier to reach. And wow, I tell you, like, you know, and you know, because we've spoken about this before, and we know a lot of people trying to plug those holes in the ship, but it's a systems shift. And it really illuminated a lot of the vulnerability in our entire domestic food system, that we've gone, it's like to the extreme. We have the big, big, big infrastructure, and then we have the super micro infrastructure. There's no middle class in manufacturing, I guess, is what you could look at. It's like the middle of the road manufacturing, like smaller scale, they'll toll, they'll do small batch, but they're still SQF certified. They still have the certification and third-party audits that you need in place to do play ball with the big guys. Like, the big retailers, and can access certifications, which also you need, because there's a huge pressure from distributors and retailers that you have to have these certifications. That is an expectation of the consumer. It's an expectation and a requirement of the forces that dictate path to market in larger American marketplaces. And then everything else is kind of, you know, like discombobulated. It's a lot of work to get it all put together.
How are you navigating that? You have farmers that you know of, and you have products that you're probably interested in, or ingredient. That's the other thing, getting the crop into an ingredient. That's a super hard challenge.
It is. And that's where we're frequently having an issue is, you know, we have like Proso Millet in a silo that it's a regenerative farm. They are not organic, so they can't be processed through an organic mill. We need to have a dehulled. There's only two places in North America that dehull millet. It's not enough to make it worthwhile to ship all the way to Bay State and back, because it's like a truck. It's like a little less than a truckload, you know. And so those are the things we're up against. You know, where we take a stance as a brand is like, okay, well, we can't in good faith say we are regenerative, because it doesn't exist yet.
Yeah,
we buy from farms that are doing regenerative methods, but it's inconsistent, because we'll get like a truckload of that and then it's gone. And then we're, you know, have to dip in the commodity, and we can't just be out of stock. That's not going to work.
Right.
So we've adopted a concept called regenerative by design. And it's like our internal framework where we're like, okay, our supply chain is regenerative by design. We're working to design it to be connected to A, family farms that are open to transitioning to regenerative, and B, you know, smaller farms that are already doing regenerative. And then also our path to market for new products is going to be based around what is available that's already regenerative and already milled. And then we can buy it. And it's like, we don't have to do all that work ourselves. But boy, like, you know, it's a process.
It is. I'm hopeful that as people that maybe aren't familiar with your brand yet, start to learn more about it. And I know you do a lot of podcasts and trade shows, and I mean, you're really getting Snacktivist out there. So that's so great. But maybe, you know,
slowly but surely.
Yes, it's a lot of work, but that's what I'm hopeful that consumers start to understand. And maybe that's more of a role that our network can hopefully help play, is to explain this, that when they support brands like yours, they are supporting building the pathway, because most food companies are not even looking at how to bring this in, and they will adopt it after you build the road, after you build the road and create the ingredients. And they become less expensive over time, all those things, you know, but there are a lot of people claiming regenerative with no shame, quite frankly. And it's impressive that you are cautious with that you are aware of the challenge of being truthful about what that really means.
I have to say that's becoming a really big deal, because like even at Expo, looking around, and I'm like, okay, you're using the word regenerative. A, do you know what that really means? B, how are you finding that? Because I can't find it, and I know hundreds of people.
But Joni, they added a cover crop to their existing supply chain. So poof.
Yeah, poof.
It's regenerative.
Just like magic. Whee! It's there. And that's again that whole thing, like Sarah, where I'm like, you guys, you're not totally getting it. Or I talk to farmers and I'm like, hey, so you're doing regenerative. What crops are you growing? Because if it's not up there in this like hefty list of crops they're growing, I'm like, then you're just doing that monoculture approach with a cover crop thrown in, or maybe you minimize some tillage, or maybe you had the neighbor's goat come over for a month. Like, and that's great. I mean, it's all starting pieces.
Exactly.
Like I really want to encourage those early movers that are making those first steps, but it's a process. And if you commit to regenerative every year or the rest of your life, you're farming, you're going to be like upping your game. That whole concept of additionality that's present in the carbon market needs to be philosophically overlaid on all the processes we're doing in all like food manufacturing and farming systems, is like, how do we do it better? And every year you have to look at that.
Continuous
improvement.
You're
never reaching perfection. Yeah, you're never reaching perfection. It doesn't exist like that.
Mm-hmm. How can people find your snacks or Snacktivist snacks if they want to?
Well, right now we just launched our baking mix, four of our baking mixes on Thrive Market, which we're really happy about.
Yeah.
And on Thrive Market, there's a button for regenerative, but there's no button for regenerative by design. But then we're like, well, we have to let people know that they're supporting the work to get there. So we're like, okay, fine. We'll call ourselves regenerative there.
Yeah.
But full disclosure, we're not there yet. We only have like one ingredient at a time that I'd say actually is like truly regenerative.
Full disclosure, no one's there yet. So
yeah. You know. Okay. Well, that makes me feel better.
In my humble opinion.
Yeah. Like as we build the ship.
Yes.
But, and then also, of course, Amazon is always an easy place to get us. And we had a finished product line with some snacks that we launched right before COVID. And then we needed to change our co-packer. And of course, we all know what happened going into 2020 and manufacturing. So we actually have not relaunched our snack line. We're just doing the baking mixes. It was really tough to raise capital during COVID, especially regenerative. No one knew what regenerative was. A rural woman in Idaho, middle age, no turn and burn exit, like, you know, background. I come from health sciences and hard sciences. Like, you know, VCs just don't throw money at that easily. They just don't. So, so we're still doing just our baking mixes, but we're looking to launch some snacks again this year, because we have found some investors that are excited about what we're doing and see the big picture and understand why biodiverse grains being a normalized staple in America is a huge driver to all regenerative systems.
Yeah.
So hooray.
And share with people like your social media handles and how they could do you have a newsletter or anything like that that they could follow you.
Yeah. We're actually redoing our newsletter completely. So if you go to our website, which is snacktivistfoods.com, and sign up for our newsletter, we are totally relaunching it. And we are actually launching like another brand face of Snacktivist, because we really want to transition the concept of Snacktivist away from being like a noun to being an action word. It's a descriptor. Like, it's our consumers who are Snacktivists, not our package, right?
Yeah.
So we're working on that as well. But so stay tuned. Things are going to get really exciting, and we've got some really cool partnerships with our farmers that are getting ready to launch. Super cool stuff.
That is great. This episode brought to you by the Global Food and Farm community, globalfoodandfarm.com, a private online space where farmers, chefs, emerging food entrepreneurs, and conscious consumers learn about and apply the latest science behind building healthier soils for a healthier world. Members also gain access to help with their marketing and communication efforts through our Grounded Growth Paddock, featuring DIY instructional videos and joint marketing projects that are designed to help small businesses find an audience for the better products they are making. The community provides new original content to members each week in the form of video interviews, scholarly articles, and the chance to ask Dr. Jill Clapperton any questions you may have each week. To get a free online tour of our digital streaming library and learn more about how this amazing resource community can help your business grow, contact me, Sarah Harper, at Sarah, S-A-R-A, at Global Food and Farm, all spelled out, GlobalFoodAndFarm.com.
So my name is Bastien Guillochon. I'm the CDC at the chef de cuisine, sorry, at the restaurant Blue Hill at Stone Barns in New York. I've been there for 8 years now, originally from France, and I'm actually on my way to go back to France and open my own restaurant in France. So.
Oh wow, that's wonderful! Congratulations.
Thank you.
What is your definition of regenerative agriculture?
My definition will be what I think of this type of agriculture from a chef point of view, obviously, and not a farmer point of view, and how to support this system. To me, what I think is the most important is that when you take something from the soil, you need to give it back in some way. Yeah, so one analogy I like to do is to compare soil as a bank account. So when you take money from your bank account, if you, at some point you don't put money back, you're not going to have money coming. So it's kind of the same with the soil. If you just, you know, plant some crops that are taking from the soil and never planting something that give back to the soil, like cover crop, and you don't do any rotation, the soil is going to be very weak, and the quality of the vegetable and the disease are going to come. So what's important, to go back on my original point, it's like, how do you create an economy for those intercrop, for those cover crops? Because right now there is a big market for tomatoes and corn and all of those well-known vegetables. But what about, you know, oat and rye and other cover crop that can be used? And it's actually very delicious once you start using some culinary craft, and you can make some beautiful dishes with it. And the great point of doing that is like creating an extra economy for the farmer, and that will motivate them to use this technique more than, you know, using pesticide or fertilizer or all of that.
Do you think regenerative tastes different? Can you taste a difference in the way it was grown?
Yeah, I really believe so, yeah. Having done a lot of tasting and side-by-side tasting of the same vegetable but grown in a different soil, it definitely tastes very different, for sure. Mm. Right now, the chefs, you know, we are very lucky to be in a position where chefs are in the light, kind of. And I think it's important to use that to show and educate people how they should eat and how and what they should eat. If we make take the example of rye or oat, for example, if we as chef make people love it when they come in our restaurants, they're going to want to cook that at home. And then you create an economy that's, you know, more than just, you know, the real restaurant, because we can influence people to change the way they eat, but we still need some more people to actually make a change to the world of farming.
How is that you feel like you're practicing regenerative principles or working with regenerative agriculture in Stone Barns or Blue Hill Farm?
it's the connection between the farmer and the chefs. It's the fact that the restaurant is on the farm and that the farmer are coming to talk to the chef every day, or the chef is going to the field every day. And when you have a farmer, and even if you are the most talented farmer, you don't have the mind chef, the mind of a chef, to see that something in your farmer's mind is not usable, or it doesn't, you can't do anything with it. But when a chef goes out there and see that there is some beautiful oat shoots that you can eat, and it's very sweet and delicious, that's how we can, I think it's that this very close connection, it's the key to it. Because to my mind, at least, a chef can't be a great chef if you don't know what's going on outside of your kitchen. Mm-hmm. And a farmer can be the best farmer ever, but if he's not in contact with chef, it's at some point it's going to be limited in the what he can do.
It really speaks to the community nature of regenerative. And that's true of the plants too, and how they work together and give and take. And
right. And that's, yeah, that's the other point is like the biodiversity. It's extremely important in regenerative agriculture. Mm-hmm. And for a chef, it's, you can see that in two different ways. It's like it's much easier and controlled to have the same vegetable all year long to cook with. Mm-hmm. Or you can see that as being extremely boring and want to cook with, you know, 10 different vegetables or 15 different vegetables. Mm-hmm. And that's you know, that's same. It's like the culture of having chefs coming into this kitchen and seeing how we treat vegetable and how we react to the pressure from the farm and creating different menus and changing the menu all the time. It's also necessary to support this kind of agriculture. Mm-hmm. To me, it's like it's extremely satisfying and exciting, but there is other people that find that crazy and and not controlled enough, and you know.
I'm curious, have you had a chance to work with Jill Clapperton or learn, you know, anything from her? Or?
Yeah, I mean, she taught me about the intercropping. Mm-hmm. And how important and what it can bring to the soil to plant different things on the same row, because they work well together, or they create something special when they are close to each other. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first time I met her, she came with her this kind of like microscope big machine thing, and we were like studying the quality of the food we were cooking, and it was extraordinary. Every time we were putting a dish together, we were like giving her like a little spoon, and she was like putting it on the microscope or whatever it's called, and looking at the
nutrient density.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, very cool. Like, if you had to sum it up, like in one or two sentences, well, how would you fill in the blank of regenerative agriculture is?
It is what's necessary to, yeah. And you need more people to support this kind of agriculture, including and especially chef, to have a healthy soil. And if you have a healthy soil, you have healthy vegetable. And if you have healthy vegetable, you have healthy people.
You've been listening to Tasting Terroir, a podcast made possible by a magical collaboration between the following companies and supporters, all working together to help farmers, chefs, food companies, and consumers to build healthier soil for a healthier world. Rhizoterra. Owned by Dr. Jill Clapperton, Rhizoterra is an international food security consulting company providing expert guidance for creating healthy soils that yield tasty, nutrient-dense foods. Check us out at rhizoterra.com. That's rhizoterra.com. And the Global Food and Farm online community, an ad-free global social network and soil health streaming service that provides information and connections that help you apply the science and practice of improving soil health. Join us at globalfoodandfarm.com. And from listeners like you, who support us through our Patreon account at patreon.com/tastingterroir. Patrons receive access to our full-length interviews and selected additional materials. Patrons will also have the opportunity to submit questions that we will answer on the podcast. Tune in next week to hear more interviews and insights with myself, Sarah Harper, and Dr. Jill Clapperton, as well as the regenerative farmers, chefs, and emerging food companies in the Global Food and Farm online community and beyond. If you like our work, please give us a 5-star rating and share the podcast with your friends. Thanks so much for listening and for helping us get the word out about this new resource to taste the health of your food. Until next week, stay curious, keep improving, and don't stop believing that better is possible when knowledge is available.